Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Monday, October 7th. Today, we're joined by Eric and Kate to discuss a hot topic in nutrition. Let's dive right in, shall we? Today, we're discussing a recent study on ultra-processed foods and their impact on children's diets. Let's start with the key findings. What did the study reveal about UK toddlers' diets?
Well, Ted, the study's findings are pretty eye-opening. It showed that UK toddlers were getting nearly half their calorie intake from ultra-processed foods. And here's the kicker. By the time these kids hit 7 years old, that number jumped to a whopping 59% of their diet. That's more than half of what they're eating.
That's absolutely alarming. We need to understand that these numbers are from 2007-2008, so it's likely even worse now. Just imagine how much...
Hold on a second, Kate. We shouldn't jump to conclusions here. The study's definition of ultra-processed foods included items like flavored yogurts and most breakfast cereals. It's not all junk food, as you're implying. We need to be careful.
But that doesn't make it okay. These foods are still filled with additives and unhealthy ingredients. We can't just brush this off as no big deal. Our children's health is at stake here, and we need to take this seriously.
Let's take a step back and clarify what exactly counts as an ultra-processed food. Can you both explain this concept?
Sure, Ted. Ultra-processed foods, or UPFs as they're often called, are industrial formulations made with ingredients you wouldn't typically find in a home kitchen. They often contain emulsifiers, colorings, and sweeteners. Think of it like this. If your great-grandmother wouldn't recognize it as food, it's probably ultra-processed.
Exactly, and they're designed to be convenient and hyper-palatable, often at the expense of nutritional value. It's like they're engineered to make us crave more, regardless of whether our bodies actually need the nutrients. They're the food equivalent of a catchy pop song, designed to hook you, but not necessarily good for you.
While that's true, some UPFs can still provide essential nutrients. It's not black and white. For example, fortified cereals can be a good source of vitamins and minerals. We need to consider the
whole picture. But the long-term health impacts of consuming so many artificial ingredients are concerning, especially for developing children. We can't ignore the potential risks just because some UPFs have a few added vitamins. It's like putting a Band-Aid on.
What are some common examples of ultra-processed foods that parents might be feeding their children?
As mentioned earlier, flavored yogurts and many breakfast cereals fall into this category. Also, things like packaged snacks, soft drinks, and frozen meals. It's basically anything that comes in a box or package with a long list of ingredients you can't pronounce. Think of it as the stuff that can survive a nuclear apocalypse. Probably not the best for our bodies.
Don't forget about fast food meals, which are a major source of UPFs for many families. It's like a UPF buffet. Burgers, fries, chicken nuggets, you name it. And let's not even get started on those sugary drinks that come with kids' meals. It's a nutritional nightmare disguised as a convenient dinner option.
Let's look at this issue in a broader context. Can you think of any similar health concerns from the past that we can learn from?
Certainly. This reminds me of the trans fat controversy in the 1990s and early 2000s. Trans fats were widely used in processed foods until their health risks became apparent. It was like the food industry's dirty little secret. They made food taste great and last longer, but at a huge cost to our health.
That's a good comparison. Trans fats were linked to increased heart disease risk, much like how we're now discovering the potential long-term effects of UPFs. It's like history repeating itself, but this time with our kids' health on the line. We need to act faster than we did with trans fats.
The trans fat issue is relevant because it shows how dietary guidelines can change based on new research. In 2015, the FDA determined that trans fats were no longer generally recognized as safe.
But it took decades of harm before action was taken. We can't afford to wait that long with UPFs. Our children's health is at stake right now. Every day we delay is another day of potential harm. We need to be proactive.
That's an overreaction. The food industry adapted to the trans fat regulations, and they can do the same with UPFs if necessary. We need to give them time to reformulate products and find alternatives. Rushing into drastic measures could have unintended consequences.
It's not just about industry adaptation. We need immediate action to protect our children's health. Every day we wait is another day our kids are consuming these potentially harmful foods. We can't sit back and hope the industry will change on its own.
How did public awareness and policy changes regarding trans fats unfold? And what parallels can we draw to the current UPF situation?
Public awareness grew gradually through scientific studies and media coverage. Eventually, labeling requirements were introduced, followed by bans in some locations. It was a measured, evidence-based approach. We saw a shift in consumer behavior as people became more informed, which in turn pushed companies to change their practices.
Yes, but it was a slow process. With UPFs, we're already seeing a quicker rise in public concern thanks to documentaries and books on the subject. It's like we're in the information age for food. People are waking up to the reality of what's in their food much faster than before. We need to capitalize on this momentum and push for change now.
That's true, but we need to be careful not to create a moral panic. The trans fat issue was addressed through evidence-based policy, not knee-jerk reactions. We need to take a balanced approach considering all aspects of the issue before making sweeping
changes. Evidence is
mounting
quickly for UPFs. We don't have the luxury of time when it comes to our children's health. Every day we delay is another day of potential harm. We need to act now, based on what we already know. It's better to err on the side of caution when it comes to our kids.
Looking ahead, how do you see this situation unfolding? What are some potential outcomes we might see in the coming years?
I believe we'll see a gradual shift in consumer behavior as awareness grows. Food companies will likely respond by reformulating products to be less processed. It's like when organic food started gaining popularity. Companies adapted to meet the demand. We might see more clean label products hitting the shelves with simpler ingredient lists.
That's not enough. We need immediate government intervention, including taxes on UPFs and subsidies for fresh, whole foods. We can't just sit back and hope the market will correct itself. We need to make healthy options more affordable.
Well, slow
and
down.
Accessible.
Heavy-handed regulations could have unintended consequences, like making food more expensive for low-income families. We need to consider the broader economic impact. It's not as simple as slapping a tax on certain
But the long-term
foods.
Health costs of a poor diet are even higher. We can't afford not to act. Think about the burden on our healthcare system if we don't address this now. It's like investing in prevention rather than
treatment.
What
about the role of education? How might that factor into future developments?
Education is key. We should focus on teaching cooking skills and nutrition in schools, empowering people to make healthier choices. It's like the old saying, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. By equipping people with knowledge and skills, we can create lasting change.
Education alone won't solve this. We need structural changes to make healthy food more accessible and affordable. It's like trying to teach someone to swim in a pool full of sharks. No matter how good their technique is, they're still in danger. We need to change the environment, not just educate people about it.
But forcing changes through regulation could backfire. We need a balanced approach that includes education and gradual industry changes. Look at how successful public health campaigns have been in reducing smoking rates. We can apply similar strategies.
There's no time for gradual change. Every day, children are consuming harmful levels of UPFs. We need to treat this like the public health crisis it is. Would we take a gradual approach if there was lead in our water supply? This is just
panic won't help. We need to carefully consider the economic and social implications of any policy changes. Rushing into drastic measures could have unforeseen consequences. We need to take a measured, evidence-based
The health of our
approach.
Children should be the top priority. Regardless of short-term economic impacts, we can't put a price on our kids' well-being. It's time to take bold action and create a healthier future for the next generation.
Well, it's clear this is a complex issue with no easy answers. We've heard compelling arguments from both sides today. As we wrap up, I want to thank Eric and Kate for their insights. This conversation highlights the need for ongoing research and dialogue about the role of ultra-processed foods in our diets. Until next time, this is Ted from Listen2. Stay informed and stay healthy.